It's 8 o'clock. This is KVNF Regional News for Monday, December 28th. I'm Patricia Naft. Construction on Highway 92 near Hotchkiss has been delayed. KVNF's Jake Ryan reports.
Tracy Truelove with the Colorado Department of Transportation says the asphalt contractor wasn't able to finish the road before winter hit.
What you'll see is the project going into winter shutdown, so there won't be more construction happening through the next couple months of winter. But you will see barrels in place to kind of guide traffic because the final striping and the final top mat of asphalt remains to be completed.
The speed limit reduction will remain in place until April or May when the project is finished. The bridge will bring the highway over the railroad, one of the main reasons for its construction. Truelove says that the project was planned and started before coal production dropped off and the number of trains going through the area dwindled. Safety was also a big factor, she says, in going forward with the $13 million construction project. A five-year study was done for the area.
And it showed over 99 accidents happened along that stretch of highway. Now, some of them involved property damage type of accidents. There were 10 injury accidents reported and one fatality during that five-year period. There's obviously some economic things happening in the area, but we're still looking at this stretch of highway as needing some safety improvements.
Crews are expected to start work up again in March or April. For KVNF, I'm Jake Ryan.
Authorities say they've recovered three guns stolen from the Museum of the West in Grand Junction. In early November, two handguns that once belonged to a Mesa County sheriff and a gold-plated pistol owned by actor Leo Carrillo were taken from a display case. A release from the Grand Junction Police Department say that the investigation into the theft is ongoing, but confirms the firearms were recovered through the execution of search warrants. The police department says charges have yet to be filed, and authorities will hold on to the guns as evidence. However, they will eventually be returned to the museum. North Dakota and Colorado rank as the two states with the fastest growing populations. That's according to new data released by the U.S. Census Bureau. Inside Energy's Dan Boyce has more.
Oil prices and job numbers may be dropping, but that did not stop North Dakota's population from growing more than 2% in 2015. That's the fourth year in a row North Dakota has ranked number one. Colorado at number two added more than 100,000 people in 2015. However, states like these where fossil fuel extraction makes a big part of the economy did feel the pinch in wage growth this year. Colorado, Wyoming, and North Dakota ranked 39th, 44th, and 48th, respectively, for wage growth. For Inside Energy, I'm Dan Boyce.
The executive director of Colorado's Department of Natural Resources is leaving the position at the end of January to become Denver Water's director of planning. Benta Berkland sat down with Mike King to talk about the future of the oil and gas and fracking debate and his time heading the department.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Glad to participate.
You've served in the Department of Natural Resources for almost a decade and worked under three governors. What are some of the biggest changes you've seen during that time?
Well, I think we've seen in the oil and gas development area, we've seen the movement of the pressure from oil and gas going from the peons and impacts to sage-grouse and mule deer habitat to the Front Range and impacts to communities and places where people live. I think in water, I think we've seen the state make historic strides forward, having watched Denver and the West Slope reach agreement on the Colorado River Cooperative, the WISE project for the Southern Metro area, and then ultimately the Colorado Water Plan.
And so for the water plan, I know your new job with Denver Water, you'll be involved in long-range planning there. A lot of it is going to come down to legislative action, which we may not see this upcoming session.
It will, but I think one of the interesting things, having served at the state level as long as I have, I've watched municipalities and counties and utility providers actually have more of an impact on the ground. And so I think the Colorado Water Plan lays out an aggressive vision, but it doesn't have the to-do list that I think some of the people on the ground will have.
And the department oversees state parks. We've got mining, forestry, oil and gas. Like we mentioned, water and water conservation, a lot of complex policy areas. What have you found most challenging?
During my tenure, oil and gas has dominated the agenda. The activity that we saw again during Governor Ritter's early years and the peons really led to the change in the makeup of the Oil and Gas Conservation Commission. I think people have kind of forgotten that when Governor Ritter showed up, it was a 7-member board, 5 of whom were from industry. Governor Ritter changed that where it's now 3 out of 9 members are from industry, and we now have health experts and natural resource experts, reclamation folks. So that was a fundamental shift. As it switched to the communities, that has been a whole different ballgame, trying to figure out how to get communities comfortable with an industrial activity, understanding that that statement shows you how difficult this is. This is an industrial activity where people live and play, and it's almost inevitable that the conflicts we've seen would arise. And now we're trying to work through those and see if we can come up with some better ways to engage communities and local governments early in the process to minimize some of those conflicts.
And the state's in the process of adopting rules to give local communities more control without allowing them to outright ban the practice. Do you think that's going to placate some of the concerns, or are we just bound for a costly multi-million dollar ballot fight no matter what happens? And then we also have cases before the state Supreme Court.
Starting with the cases before the Supreme Court, the Supreme Court could issue very narrow rulings and say that the Longmont ban and the Fort Collins moratorium are or are not legal. And if they stop there, that won't provide much guidance to the state and local governments. If the court chooses to go further down the road and give some broader direction about the relative balance between state control and local control, I think that might help clarify some of the questions that we're wrestling with right now. Who knows where that will go? Clearly, the rulemaking that we're undertaking right now is intended to provide additional opportunity for local governments and communities to weigh in on oil and gas. Do I think that will cause local governments to be okay? There are clearly some local governments who want to be able to say yes or no. This rulemaking won't provide that veto power to local governments. That's going to have to come through legislation or ultimately through an initiative process, which I think would be a fairly draconian way to go about trying to resolve this issue.
Any advice for your successor?
Well, buy some antacids. I hope your heart is strong. This is a position where you take a lot of criticism. So you have to come in with a dose of humility, but also a strong sense of what you think is right and wrong, and understand that people are not going to agree with you at every turn. That's the hardest thing, is knowing that you're making people mad. By nature, that's not what I want to do, but this job requires some really tough decisions. At the end of the day, it's such a great job. It's been the experience of a lifetime.
Thanks. That's outgoing Executive Director of the Colorado Department of Natural Resources, Mike King. He'll be leaving his position at the end of January. I'm Benta Berkland in Denver.
For KBNF News, I'm Patricia Naft.